The views expressed on the Creative City Show are not necessarily those of its sponsors or any organization that the host is affiliated with.
Good morning, Tucson. Welcome to the Creative City Show with me, your host, Zach Yenser, here on 1030 The Voice. It is Monday, January 6th, and for a most intents and purposes, Happy New Year. This is the day where most people get back in the grind, start making things happen, catch up on the hundreds of emails that have arrived since many took off on December 23rd. You lucky people, you. Welcome back to Life and Reality. I am here to help. I'm here to ease the pain of that first morning back and just the usual struggle to get in on a Monday. Just in general, hope you had a great weekend. Every day, Monday through Friday, we talk about the people and ideas shaping the future of Tucson and do kind of an around the news hour to get back in. We call it Talking Tucson, informal name. Just we talk local, we talk national, we talk politics. We just kind of what came in over the weekend that is interesting or that kind of shapes the week ahead. And so that's what we're up to today. First, I'll get into this in a second, a big announcement about my show. Looking forward to getting into that here, and then we'll jump in. My read on the killing of Qasem Soleimani, this came in end of the week, about Friday or so. I've been watching hot takes on social media and news networks all weekend. I have my thoughts. I'll give you my take probably in the second segment. Why Tucson isn't built to benefit from its hot real estate market. We'll get into that as well. And then finally, I was telling a listener the other day, three times a charm. I've tried twice to get to this. Let's hope today is three times a charm. My thoughts on Stone Garden funding not able to be used for asylum. And so that decision came down about a week ago. Week and change, and I hope to finally get to my thoughts on that whole situation. But a big announcement about my show. I am taking my talents to South Beach. I had to get that in. The famous LeBron James. No, that's not what's happening. The show is not moving. It's not shifting time. It's not going anywhere. I am here on 1030 The Voice. We'll get that right out of the way. This show has been on the air about 2.5 years, which is crazy. October marked 2 years, so it's probably 2 years and change, not quite 2.5 years. But a friend to many of us, especially longtime listeners, Doug Martin, was and has been a mentor of mine in the community, and he knew what I was working on in Tucson. I was doing a lot of intergenerational work, a lot of work on retaining young people, limiting brain drain, things like that, 2 years ago. And he said, "Do you want to come on?" And I'd written a book and all that good stuff. He said, "Do you want to come on and do a radio show on the weekend?" And I said, "Absolutely. I'd love to take what I'm doing, kind of zoom back, look at it from a city standpoint, but I'd love to do a show." And so for about a year and a half, did that show here on 1030 The Voice over the weekend. It was a Saturday afternoon show. And then, of course, early in 2019, came on here as a daily show. I just wanted to shout out Doug Martin for kind of seeing what I couldn't see. And almost 2.5 years later, I'm still here. But the show then and the show now has been called The Creative City Show. And the name came from where my head was at and what I was really involved in back then. Within the last year, I started to feel like the name doesn't do justice to the breadth of topics that we talk about, and that the conversations that you and I have gotten to be a part of on the air just don't connect with the name, and certainly the moment in Tucson's time that I believe we're in, that I speak to on the air, it just didn't match the name. And so when you go about a show rebrand, a show changing of the name, that's something that I've spent probably 3 or 4 months, maybe 5 months months thinking about working with the station through, working with some of my network and just kind of floating this and going, where are we going? What are we doing? Because those are things to take seriously. And so I'm excited to announce, after a lot of thought and a lot of work, that from today on, I'm excited to that the show will be called Same Content, Same Host, Same Me, Same Format, but it will be now Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. And longtime listeners, if you've been listening for a while, know that often I'll bring up this idea of a tipping point. It's the point at which a series of small changes or incidents become significant enough to cause a larger, more important change. And I believe we're at such a moment, not the first one, not the last one. Everyone likes to say, this is the moment. I'm not naive enough to think that's true. I think it is a moment. I think we're at a point in time in Tucson where we've come out of 6 to 8 years of a series of small changes or incidents, and we're at a point where they've become significant enough to potentially cause a larger, more important change, that the decisions we make in the next 5 to 10 years here in Tucson will shape the next 50. Who knows what the 50 after that will look like, but I think for the next 50, what we do today, tomorrow, in the next couple of years matters to a large degree. It matters a lot. And I wanted to start using this platform, this conversation we get to have every day, to talk about the people, the ideas, and the issues that are shaping that next 5 to 10 years. A name that would reflect that kind of new mission and vision that maybe wasn't in the same place 2.5 years ago. So Tipping Point with Zach Yenser is what you'll start hearing, what you hear on this show, what you'll hear throughout the day as you listen to our other live and local shows. I just wanted you to know that's why, that's what's going on. And I'm excited to share this with you. So I wanted to go ahead and advice I gotten at some point was to just go through with it. Don't mention anything. I wanted to mention something. I think it's an exciting thing. 2.5 years. And here we go. So that's all I'll mention about that. Was excited to share that with you. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. Keep calling in 790-2040. This is a conversation with you, Tucson. This is a live, local, ongoing conversation that we get to have, and I think the show has grown to what it is because of you, and I genuinely mean that. So continue to reach out, engage, and give us a call. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. When we come back from the break, my read on the killing of Qasem Soleimani. We take Mondays to do kind of around the issues, local, national, political, foreign, whatever it is. What are the things shaping the week? What do you need to know getting into the week? This has been on the interwebs a lot, the killing of Qasem Soleimani. I'll give you my thoughts. Then we'll also get to, later on in the hour, why Tucson isn't built to benefit from its hot real estate market. A lot of people have been posting. Tucson's one of the hottest real estate markets in the country. And there are certainly some things to get excited about that. But nobody is talking about the story within the story and how Tucson is not really built to benefit from that hot real estate market over the long haul. We'll get into that as well. Tucson, you are listening to Tipping Point with Zach Yenser here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back after a short break. Don't go anywhere.
Your source for trusted local news and talk, 1030 The Voice.
Hi, this is Jason with Keller Williams Realty. Today I want to share a pricing strategy with you that I would call speculative. It's where we take a home's fair market value and we would speculate a bit above that price and hope that a buyer is going to come along and pay top dollar due to its unique demand. Stay tuned next week for another pricing tip. Call me if I can help with anything at 520-310-6761.
Tucson, welcome on back in. You're listening to Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. In-depth news and discussion about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future every Monday through Friday morning here on 1030 The Voice. 9 to 10. Welcome back. And if you joined it during the break and you're like, wait a second, I've been listening for 6 months, 12 months, I don't know what this show is. It's the same guy, same show, but rebranded to better reflect what we do together here every day. If you missed that, I quick intro'd that in the first segment. Here's the good news. You can listen to our podcast by going to kvui.com/podcast, or you can go to iTunes or Google Play Music and listen back to all of our shows that we do. Again, we're on hourly 9 to 10 every day here on 1030 The Voice, so check that out. On Mondays, we do a kind of get into the week together, talking about the news over the weekend that shapes the week ahead. And right near the end of our week together last week, big news that came out of the Middle East, that the U.S. Military at the command of President Trump took the opportunity to make a strike on the traveling party of Qasem Soleimani, killing him on Friday, their local time. And wanted to talk about that a little bit as a major item, obviously, coming into the weekend, coming out of the week. It is consuming the Twitters. It is consuming the news. It is consuming the Facebook. And so I wanted to talk about it a little bit. And here's the angle that I'm going to take on it. I've seen some things out there that I don't think match up, that I don't think line up. The first one is that this was an impeachment distraction. And certainly it's interesting that as Clinton was about to go through impeachment proceedings at the stage we are with President Trump, that there were bombings on Iraq. I mean, the similarities are uncanny. However, I think that there are some details that make this different. Now, I also want to say that there are many times where I feel like the president's foreign policy is an ad hoc, as it feels like, a Twitter foreign policy. I think there's a whether you like him or not, I don't think you can deny that when you talk to his staff, when you read from his staff, when you read in the news, that there's a lot of times where the foreign policy establishment is often surprised by the president. And let's be real, they felt that way with Obama as well. Obama and Trump have a lot more overlap in how they manage foreign policy than a lot of people either know or would like to say is true. But in this case, I think that, and the facts show this, that this targeted strike on Soleimani had been an option on the table for years for our military to take. And more directly, this strike was on the table, as we've come to find out, since May. And so the inner sanctum, the inner room, has been discussing, do we do this? When do we do this? If we do this, how do we do it since May? And what we're finding is that this option has been on the table for a while, but hasn't been taken because there were too many dominoes it would tip over in the past, distraction from other interventions, so on and so forth. So I just want to address one. I think what I've seen on Facebook, that this is a distraction from impeachment, I'm not buying it. My mind can always be changed with facts. That's, I think it's the best way to change your mind. Until the facts are shown that this was nothing more than a diversion, I don't think the facts point to that. I think it's convenient. I think it's timely. But I think that this was a strategic decision where the right time at the right moment came, and the strike was taken. So I wanted to mention that. The other thing that I wanted to address, this might be the more interesting part, is, and I could be very well wrong, but my hunch, sitting right, we talk about, you know, foreign policy by Twitter. This is armchair foreign policy by Radio Mike. So just put that out there. But I think what we've seen is that we're going to go to World War III is overblown. I don't think that this is going to end in war. What's interesting is that this strike happens, and it may have strategically happened, when Iran is at its weakest that it's been in a really long time. Even the sanctions under Obama didn't have Iran, as I understand it, at its point where it is right now. I mean, the religio, you know, the theological form of government that Iran runs by has never been weaker. There is so much dissension. There's so much civil war. not actual civil war, but there's civil strife within Iran as we speak today. There are major leaders calling for Ayatollah Khomeini to step down, for the form of government to change. There are many people within the country saying, look, I don't care about any of this other stuff. It's sad that Soleimani is gone. We don't have the bandwidth to do anything. Repair our economy. We can't eat. We can't drink. We can't grow. We are on our knees. Let's get it fixed. Let's get it together. And so from a state to state level, I think what we see on social media and the media, and what I think is the prosecution that we've seen from the media on this, I think is personally disgusting. And I rarely use those terms, but I just think where we come from, the Walter Cronkites of the world, is a long ways away in our media. I think the way that the media and our social media networks are looking at this is wrong, just plainly. I don't think this ends up in state-on-state war. Iran is not in that spot. And interestingly enough, Iraq is also in that spot in the sense that they're going through a government transition. So all that coming together is, I don't think we are in a position where the states of Iran or Iraq as a state, as a government, are in a position to announce a war. What I think is more likely is what has been happening, escalation of what has been happening for a long time. Iran has been working through proxies, and that's always been seen as a strategic move. My thought on things is that this is all that they have. I think Iran knows that by sheer number, by sheer force, you declare a traditional war on the U.S., you get a regional even war going on. Our military is just too powerful, right? And that can sound hawkish. It's not where I'm coming from with it. But numbers on numbers, we still have the strongest military in the world. It doesn't benefit Iran to go into a war. So the tweets you're seeing from Iran, the social media stuff, the news stuff. I mean, if you're Iran, you have to respond the way you responded. Like, what's the Ayatollah gonna say? Well, that stinks, right? This was the viceroy to Iraq, the number two in command, beloved by his people. The Soleimani guy is a big deal. What are you supposed to say? Then the U.S. will pay for it. I think we're gonna get the pricks, in the arm. We're gonna have some of those small scale annoying attacks ramped up. We're gonna see some proxy stuff, but I don't yet see this becoming Afghanistan. I think it's overblown. We can have the philosophical conversations about whether it was right for the U.S. to actually call a terrorist and make a strike on a terrorist as Soleimani. That's a new thing, right? We haven't done that certainly in the Trump presidency where we say that a formal government leader is a terrorist and strike him as such. That's a big deal. But I just don't see it being overblown in reality like it is on social media and on the internets. Again, the best way to change your mind is through facts. If the facts change, I'm grateful that I'm not actually in the seat making the decision. I'm grateful that we can talk about it on the air. And if things change, we deal with it as it changes, on Thursday or Friday. And we certainly hope it doesn't escalate into anything bigger. I just don't think that any of the parties involved are going to be able to ramp things up. And I actually think, and I would not say this if I didn't believe it, especially with how this administration operates, but I think that this was a clear, calm, thought-through decision on the part of the Trump administration. In fact, maybe one of the few that I could point to over the last few years. I think this was made in a calculating way. I don't think this was a unthought-through reaction. And I think I was talking to friends the other day that our news media is where it is today because we don't think that people are smart enough to make up their own mind about what's really happening. And I think with some light digging into the issues, I think, I'm not the smartest tool in the shed, but I did a little bit of reading, a little bit of finding out, and this is my conclusion. And I think just my hope is that level-headed minds will prevail on both sides of the oceans on this issue. So that's my read on the precision strike, the killing of Qasem Soleimani. Before we go to our bottom of the hour news break, we're going to talk about why Tucson isn't built to benefit from its hot real estate market. My thoughts on that in a minute. Jim is on the line. He called 790-2040. Jim, I got about 2 minutes, so you call it a good time. You're live. Go ahead.
Outstanding. Well, Zach, first off, congratulations on your new show. I do want to say that you're right. We're not going to go to a full-blown World War III with Iran. And you're also right in that Qasem Soleimani was a bad guy. This guy cut his teeth, made his bones in Beirut back in 83. He was a teenager. He was like 19 at the time.
He's been at it for a while. So yep.
He's been at it for a long, long time. He was very good at what he did, and he was well-trained. And let's not forget who trained him. It was the Russians that trained him. At the time, you know, the Soviet Union was falling, but they never abandoned their Lebanese policy, ever. They supported Hezbollah in the beginning through cutouts, whether it be the Palestinian Liberation Front or the other cutout organizations at the time. But Hezbollah was nothing in 1983, and he brought the Quds and Hezbollah all the way through. And he cut his teeth on the Iran-Iraq War, which lasted for a long, long time. Now, back to whether we'll ever go to World War III with Iran. The answer is absolutely not. They will continue their asymmetrical warfare.
Yep.
That's what they're going to do.
Jim, I agree.
There is no incentive for them to expend the lives of their people or the amount of money it would take to go to war with the United States of America.
Yep.
They don't have it. So you're right about that. And I just wanted to kind of confirm that.
Jim, I really appreciate that. I'm going to let you go there because I'm getting the wind-up sign from my board operator here. But, Jim, I appreciate your call. Sounds like we're tracking, and you used the word that I probably should have used. Iran is not built for state-on-state war. It's going to be asymmetrical, and I think that's going to continue. Jim, I appreciate your call. All right, Tucson, we're going to go to bottom of the hour news here. When we come back, why Tucson isn't built to benefit from its hot, hot, hot real estate market. My thoughts on that, and I want yours too, 790-2040. We'll be right back here on Tipping Point with Zach Yenser after bottom of the hour news. Don't go anywhere.
CBS News at the top and bottom of every hour. 10:30 The Voice, Tucson's trusted local news and talk.
Tucson, welcome on back into the show. It is Monday, January 6th, and we are doing our best to do double duty. Every Monday, we do an hour called kind of Talking Tucson. It's our informal name for a show to help you and I get back into the week by talking about some of the major stories that shaped the weekend. And we're doing double duty today because not only is it Monday, January 6th, but for many of us, we are finally back to work. Some of you beautiful, lucky people got to be off since late December. And I just saw so many of my friends on social media going, I'm not ready to enter the real world. It's been a beautiful 2 weeks. I hope you had a great 2 weeks of family and friends and food and fun and time away. I hope you're energized and ready to go. I also wish you all the best with all the work that is piled up that we are going to get into here as the year begins. We're here to help you through it, Tucson, every day, Monday through Friday, 9 to 10. I won't dwell on this for too long because it is on the podcast, but from today on, as we start the year, we actually made a decision. We took months to make, but we decided it was best for the show as it's grown into, as you've helped to grow the show, and longtime listeners of the Creative City Show want you to know that same host, same time, same content, but you will now start hearing it and seeing it as Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. And to hear why I made that change and what that means going forward, check out the first segment of this hour again, where we have our podcast hosted, KVUI.com, iTunes, Google Play Music. Go check that out. We talked last segment about my read on the killing of Qasem Soleimani. I've seen a lot of what I think are some takes on Facebook and in the news media that I think are not quite based in fact. as we have it today. And so I wanted to give you my read on that. Not that I know everything, just did some reading, did some watching, did some looking, and came up with a little bit of a different conclusion than a lot of things that I saw out there. This segment I want to talk about because it came out in the news twice over the weekend, that Tucson is primed to have a hot real estate market in 2020. In fact, it'll be called by Barron's one of the top 10 hottest markets in the US of A in 2020. I want to share why I think we're not really built to benefit from that hot real estate market, and I'll tell you why. Before I get going, just want to shout out that this segment and this show today is sponsored in part by Edmund Marquez Allstate Agencies. As an Allstate agency for the last 23 years, Edmund has three local agencies to serve you around Tucson. His passion is helping Tucsonans create their best possible future, and he backs that up by serving on 8 boards of directors in Tucson, including the Rio Nuevo District, Sun Corridor, Southern Arizona Leadership Council, and more. And he brings that same commitment to helping you protect your home, auto, personal property, and financial future. Give him a call at 520-323-9333 to get your insurance quotes today. This report came out recently out of Barron, called These Will Be the Hottest Markets in the U.S. in 2020. And it's always fun to see Tucson in any kind of top 10 ranking because it just doesn't happen that often yet, although we've been showing up in these top 10s more and more over the last few years. But it starts by saying this: bucking the trend of an overall cooling U.S. housing market, 10 cities, 9 of which are located inland, will see the strongest growth in terms of sales and prices in 2020, according to a report by Realtor.com. The 10 best performing housing markets in 2020 include Boise, Idaho, McAllen, Texas, Tucson, Arizona, Chattanooga, Tennessee, Columbia, South Carolina, Rochester, New York, Colorado Springs, Colorado, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, and Memphis, Tennessee. And what they've used to calculate this is, here's the median home price, here's the projected home increase, the projected sales increase, and then they kind of combine that, and that's their rating. So anyway, all of that, Tucson is in the top 10. It's expected that our median home price in 2019 of $230,000 will increase by 3%, that sales increase of homes will increase by 3% as well, and that's going to make us one of the top hottest markets in the U.S. But this was the part that that got me, and it's a quote by a senior economist at Realtor, the group that did this survey. Here's the quote: many medium-sized cities are becoming more attractive to buyers due to their affordability, strong economic growth, and job markets, as well as the amenities they offer. The two main driving forces behind this trend are baby boomers and millennials who are looking to move to states and cities with a lower cost of living. So I am not a Debbie Downer. I am not a cynic. I am not a critic unless any of those things are appropriate to share the whole story. And so I think the whole story is not being shown here. And this quote to me highlights it, that many medium-sized cities are more attractive because of their affordability, their strong economic growth, and their job markets. And this is where I got caught. And I'm going to make a statement, and I'm not trying to be a shock jock again or be a Debbie Downer at all. I'm a homeowner, full disclosure, good housing markets. I see the benefit of that, right? So I'm not naive to how this works. But what I'm challenged by is that Tucson's economy and housing market and cost of living, I'm going to go out on a limb and say over the next, I'm going to say year, if the trend continues, we're going to see all that not being a benefit to people who live here. So here's what I'm saying. If you are moving from out of town, we welcome you. The housing market's going to look great to you from anywhere else, right? The cost of living is going to be good. Whatever wages you're bringing in is going to work for it. You're going to find a really great home for lower than you're going to pay most anywhere else. But if you are living in Tucson, you are making Tucson wages, you've been here for a while, this is not an economy that is benefiting you. And we're seeing those stories. I'll follow this up with a story here in a minute if I can get to it. My challenge is that the affordability being talked about is an affordability that is only accessible by those outside the Tucson market. And again, I'm not being a cynic or a critic. I'm not even coming at this even from a perspective that might be center left. Politically, I'm not. What I'm saying is that we have seen since the 70s, but continuing on, we have seen Arizona's wages not keep pace with the rest of the country. So what you're getting paid in Arizona, what you're certainly getting paid in Tucson, is not what you're getting paid anywhere else. So if your company is saying, look, I'm going to pay you $90,000 to live in Tucson, get an office in Tucson, buy a home in Tucson, we're a San Francisco-based company, go to Tucson. The company says, well, we don't have to pay you $140,000 because you're not in San Fran anymore. We benefit because we're going to pay you $90,000. Go to Tucson for a while, right? That's the situation that works. I struggle to see how people currently in Tucson making Tucson's median wage, even making Tucson's higher than median wage, are going to be able to see the benefit of our hot market. I also want to point out, as we have, that our hot market is not necessarily because Tucson is the most awesomest place in the world to live. I think it is, right? But from a metric standpoint, people aren't flocking to Tucson. They're flocking to Maricopa. They're not flocking to Tucson. And if they are, it's kind of the older, kind of retiring baby boomer set. So it's not like we're seeing people moving in because this is the place to be. What we're seeing in our hot real estate market is a lack of supply. We're not building enough to match the demand. And so the hotness of our market is in many ways due to where we lack, not where we're good at. And that takes me to the second point, right? Many medium-sized cities are becoming more attractive to buyers due to their affordability. We touched on that. And strong economic growth. We're seeing some economic growth. I don't think we're seeing strong economic growth. And I think the decisions, back to why we are naming, rebranding the show Tipping Point, right? The small things that have gotten us to this point where if we make the right decisions, we'll reap the benefits of it in the next few years. We've got a good foundation, but what we do the next 4 to 8 to 10 years regarding our economic decisions are going to decide whether we actually have a strong economy. And again, we're seeing a lot of companies relocate, which is great, or grow, but they're not growing from the inside, right? And so we're seeing the Tucson market be beneficial to a relocator, which is good, but it is putting pressures on the market that aren't necessarily good if you've already been here. I think that's a problem. I think we're going to see it becoming a problem. And because we don't have strong economic growth and we don't have good job markets, we're going to see more stories that came out like they did in the Daily Star over the weekend, that people are getting booted out of their rental situations because the market is hot enough to bear the increase. But the people living in those homes, and we're not talking Section 8, my friends, we're talking what used to be workforce, $600, $800, $1,000 a month. We're seeing that being increased now substantially. And people who are living in apartments and multifamily around the country, around the city, are not seeing their wages increase, are not seeing their skills develop to be able to get paid more, to be able to afford the cost of living, which I would argue for Tucson is not low anymore. Right. So again, I'm not a doomsdayer. If you know me personally or even over a while on the show, I'm an incredibly optimistic person. I have to actually watch I'm not too optimistic because you have to also be pragmatic and realistic. But I'm an optimist. But I looked at this sentence and I go, Tucson's hot real estate market is not because of its internal affordability. It's because of a supply issue. It's not because of our strong economic growth. It's not because of our job market. So where's the benefit for Tucson long term? I think we need to make some really hard decisions. I think we need to make some hard choices over the next few years about how our economy is set up to be long term sustainable. A food and service dominated economy where 60% of those companies, God love them, are independent and family owned, and are going to see a minimum wage increase here in the next couple of days, are not built to benefit themselves or other people from this hot real estate market. It's not because of our strengths. I think it's because of our weaknesses. And so I have concerns. Give me a call. Am I off base? Again, I'm a homeowner, right? A hot real estate market is a good thing for me. I'm looking at this from a community perspective. People who don't live like me or in the position that I am in. Is this good for our entire community? Give me a call, 790-2040. I want to get your thoughts on Tucson being one of the top 10 hottest real estate markets in 2020. We know the good parts of that. What's the story behind the story that has a bigger impact on our whole community? I gave my crack at that, what I thought was the story behind the story. Let me know if you agree or disagree. We're going to head to our last break of the hour. When we come back, I want to touch on Stone Garden a little bit, the story behind the story on that. The Pima County Board of Supervisors request to use some Stone Garden grant funding to fund the asylum asylum center at the former juvenile detention center of the counties was declined by the federal government. I want to talk about that and my thoughts on why and how the decision was made and where we go from here. That's how we'll close out the hour. Don't go anywhere, Tucson. You're on 1030 The Voice. This is The Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. We'll be right back.
We're Tucson's trusted voice for local news and talk. 1030 The Voice.
Tucson, welcome on back. I'm excited to be with you once again. And one last time, I want to wish everybody who is getting back into the workflow today a happy Monday and a happy first Monday of the new year. We are here to help you get your week set up every week, and especially today. And I'm also excited today, if you missed it, take a listen back when you have a chance. We've had a great an amazing experience here on the air with you over the last almost two and a half years. And some of the core names and things that we started the show with, we have, thanks to you and your engagement and what we talk about on the air, have grown past it a little bit. And so after months of planning and working on it and making this decision, same host, same show, same content, in-depth news and discussion about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. Just new name. You're going to start hearing this 9 o'clock hour referred to as Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. It just allows us to really hone in on what we do and what we bring, hopefully, to this community and to this station. So if you missed the full explanation of that, go ahead and check it out. We've gotten good responses on it so far. It is reflecting what we do in a way that I think is really positive. So I have enjoyed that with you. And we've talked about some news that came in over the weekend, or at least crossed my desk over the weekend, shaping the week ahead. We talked about the targeted strike on Qasem Soleimani and my take on that, and why I think what we've seen in the news and what we've seen on social media doesn't take the full breadth of the scenario in, and why I think that hopefully here on this program we had a little bit more of a clear-eyed view on it. Then I also talked about why Tucson may not be built to really benefit from its hot, hot, hot 2020 real estate markets. That brings us to this topic, and three times a charm is what I'm hoping for, because we've tried for two shows last week to get to this. And this is the report that is now about a week and a half old. I just wanted to give you my thoughts on it. That back in July, the Pima County Board of Supervisors decided to accept $1.2 million in federal funds from Operation Stone Garden with the contingency that $200,000 of that has to be used for humanitarian efforts. And it passed by a 3-2 vote only because there was a humanitarian piece put into the acceptance of Stone Garden funds. And of course, the Board of Supervisors, I believe the same makeup as it is right now, voted to at one point decline Stone Garden funds in one of the last couple of rounds. So we said no to it for a while. And then the county has said we'd like to have it back. And the thing that really spurred this on, just to catch us up real quick, is that the old juvenile detention center over the summer was turned into a kind of an asylum seeking kind of center for those who have been crossing the border seeking asylum. They go through a processing period, and the Benedictine Monastery was the last kind of holding place for this to happen. That is now, of course, being developed by a local developer, so they had to move somewhere else. The county has been footing the bill for the use of the detention center. It's run by a Catholic services provider, but it is much of the cost, if not all of it, is covered by the county. And so the hope was that they could use some of this Stone Garden funding to cover that expense. So I wanted to share a couple of things. I've got 5 minutes, so bear with me. If I don't get to everything I wanted to get to, it's because we have 5 minutes. But I want to touch on this because we haven't been able to in a while. I think for me, the situation that we see on the border, how I feel about it, is best described for this conversation by a recent quote from Homeland Security officials as they expanded the Migrant Protection Protocols program to the Tucson region. And basically, this program is that Department of Homeland Security will prepare bus border crossers. They'll move them more than 300 miles east into Texas so they can deposit them in Mexico instead of releasing them in the U.S. So this is a new protocol put together by the Trump administration. Officials deployed the program, as the Washington Post describes, after a modest uptick in family crossings in the Tucson sector at a time when the number of immigrants crossing the border is declining almost everywhere else. Officials view MPP as their chief line of defense on the border and worried that smugglers had identified Tucson as a weak spot because officials have been unable to stand up shelters and court hearings on the border in Arizona. So we have a border challenge here. We have a security challenge here. No surprise to anybody, but that's an interesting aspect of things. And so what's interesting is that in the grant details around Stone Garden, here's my take on it, is that there is criteria in the grant. And this is, by the way, this is public information. You can go see grant details for Operation Stone Garden program, that there is a bullet point that said OPSG funds must be used to increase operational capabilities of federal, state, local, tribal, and territorial law enforcement, preparing a layered coordinated approach to law enforcement within U.S. border states and territories, and can be used for projects that enable continuous operation of critical business and government functions, including those essential to human health, safety, and our economic security. So this may be an unpopular opinion, but to an extent that we've seen in the news that Administrator Chuck Huckleberry figured, I have another piece of this, give me a second, figured that we could use Stone Garden funding, he may not have been entirely wrong, that there are clauses in here where, because of the MPP protocol, because of the challenges we see on the border, helping a local jurisdiction stand up good asylum, holding and kind of carry over sites, I think fits. I think you can make the case, and they did, fits within the Stone Garden grant. My challenge is that it was is twofold. My challenge is that it was an assumption. I know the county was going to pay for it either way, but assuming as strongly as they did that this money could be used without actually getting cleared for it by the grant, I think is a challenge. I don't know what you do besides that because you had to stand up the asylum center. But I think assuming it without getting it cleared by the federal authorities, I don't think that, you know, obviously that it didn't happen. And so now you're kind of stuck figuring, okay, where do we go from here? I think the other challenge was making it a prerequisite for receiving Stone Garden funding. I think when you say we'll accept millions and millions of dollars only if a couple hundred thousand can be used for humanitarian purposes, the Board of Supervisors made a vote. My assumption is that now they're going to have to turn down all the Stone Garden funding because they made an assumption about what the federal government would allow them to do after they told the federal government, we don't want your money before. I think the execution of it was a little messy. Do I support a local jurisdiction standing up an asylum center? Yes. It has local security implications. It has national security implications. Up until at least recently, they were being brought here and dropped off in the streets. It's not good for anybody. There's a more humane and more secure way to do it. I think it is the asylum location at the detention center. I am for that. I think some of the messiness around how this proposal was put forth before the federal government has me a little bit confused. But what I don't hear anybody talking about is that the federal government made a decision that our asylum location was not a project that enables continuous operation of critical business and government functions essential to human health, safety, and economic security. To me, I think there's some subjectivity in that response from the federal government. I think they could have made the case if they wanted to, that the supervisor's request was appropriate. They decided not to, jeopardizing Stone Garden funding as a whole and now forcing the county to figure out other ways of funding. So that's my take on that issue. We did it with 25 seconds to go. You can always reach out to me. Head to Zach Yenser on Facebook. You can follow me there now as the show has shifted. You've been listening to Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. Thanks for listening. We'll be back 9 o'clock on Tuesday. Bill Buckmaster coming up at noon with live and local talk. Thanks, Tucson. We'll talk soon.
KVOI Cortero, AM 1030, the voice of Tucson. Trusted local news and talk. A Bustos Media Station.